This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome once again to the program. Glad to have you aboard today. And lots to get to today about last night, about tonight, and news all in between. And if you haven't seen the latest from Elliot Friedman, who's going to stop by here in a couple of moments, it is the news on William Nylander. Migraines, one of the issues plaguing William Nylander. We'll get to Elliot here in about 5 minutes as he'll kick off the program, as he normally does. Shane Willis will stop by, Carolina Hurricanes studio analyst. Carolina Hurricanes have a, am I allowed to say, commanding 2-0 series lead against the New York Islanders. No Brett Pesce for the next little while, though. They will face off against the Islanders in game 3. We'll also talk to Jason Greger, who was supposed to be on the program yesterday from the Jason Greger Show on Sports 1440 in Edmonton. In the meantime, Simon Schemberg is someone who's been around international hockey for a long time. We've had him on the program before. You've probably bumped into him online or seen him on TV or heard him on various radio shows. He's the guy that came up with the idea of the Triple Gold Club. That is his concept that we still talk about to this day. Right now, he is the managing director of the Alliance of European Hockey Clubs, still keeps a very close watch on the NHL. He is a longtime Montreal Canadiens fan. Why do I bring up Simon? Well, his tweet from about 40 minutes ago is something that probably deserves some attention. Maple Leafs fans will not like it. Boston Bruins fans will. Neutral hockey observers will look at it and say, yeah, he's got a point. So this is what Schemberg tweeted about 40 minutes ago. It is very seldom you come across a player who can play at the highest level, drive the other team nuts, get away with things, perform in clutch, and who doesn't take stupid penalties. There are not many players like Brad Marchand. Excellent point by Simon Schemberg. And to think, if you had said to yourself back in 2011, when the Boston Bruins won the Stanley Cup, and wherever Brad Marchand went after that cup victory, they had to get him there in a soup ladle, you wouldn't have said that that player turned into this player, but he very much has. And that was on display yesterday as the Boston Bruins took a 2-1 series lead against the Toronto Maple Leafs. One of the stories we'll get into here coming up in a couple of moments. Elsewhere around the NHL last night, pretty intriguing night of hockey. The LA Kings pull even with the Edmonton Oilers, 5-4 overtime victory. Andrei Kopitar, who just had a tremendous game with the overtime heroics. Quentin Byfield with a pair of assists. Adrian Kempe with 2 goals. And Cam, he can't play in the playoffs. He's going to kill the LA Kings Talbots with 27 saves. That is, by the way, and this one's a stunner, Ante Kopitar's third game-winning overtime goal. That is the most in LA Kings history. Is that not bizarre? That when you look at this team that goes back to the doubling of the NHL expansion 1967, three is the number, but there it is for Kopitar. And by the way, yes, Quentin Byfield redirected that puck to Kopitar in the extra frame. I will hear no evidence to the contrary. I will hear no talk that it was a fluke. It's also no fluke that the Vegas Golden Knights now find themselves in a 2-0 position, 2-0 after a win last night, up 2-0 against the Dallas Stars, top team in the Western Conference. Eichel and Marchessault, 1+1. Logan Thompson with 20 saves, or should I say, only had to make 20 saves. The Vegas Golden Knights, 3-1 final. They absolutely smothered the Dallas Stars last night. It's never a good thing for the home team when you're playing at home and you can hear the crack of the puck hitting every player's blade, because that means your rink has gone and that's what happened last night in Dallas. You know, it's an awful sound if you're at home and it's quiet. That means your team is getting smothered. And that's what the Vegas Knights did last night against the Dallas Stars. No Nick Hague, undisclosed injury, no problem. No problem at all. Mason Marchman, Radek Faksa left the game for the Dallas Stars in the third period. We'll find out to see what happens with them. Mark Stone, I know a lot of people don't want to hear it, but Mark Stone was excellent. Everybody's back. Everybody's healthy outside of Nick Hague. and everyone's playing well, which is kind of an incredible feat when you really think about it. One of the unsung things about, depending on how you feel about how the Vegas Golden Knights behaved around players like Mark Stone towards the end of the season, usually it takes some time for players to ramp it back up and get familiar with playing with one another. Does it not look to you like Mark Stone and Tomas Hertl have been playing together forever? There's been no uncomfortable moments. Mark Stone has re-entered this lineup. Alex Pietrangelo is back. Carrier, all of it. Everything is in its right place. Again, outside of Nick Hague. Can make the argument about Aiden Hill as well, but man, Logan Thompson's been good. And it's like, as I always say, it's like an Olympic diver into the pool. Smooth, no ripple whatsoever. This Vegas Golden Knights team, for everyone who says that there aren't teams that can flip the switch, that there aren't teams that can just turn it on come postseason, ladies and gentlemen, we submit once again the Vegas Golden Knights. So the Bruins double up the Maple Leafs 4-2. Golden Knights over the Dallas Stars to grab a commanding 2-0 series lead over the Dallas Stars. And the LA Kings are split with the Oilers heading back to California. With that, we'll bring in Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. Hello, Friege.
Hey, Jeff. How you doing, bud?
I'm well. Just mentioned off the top of the show your latest, available at sportsnet.ca. You tweeted out the link. Encourage everybody to go have a look at your latest piece. It involves William Nylander and the injury migraines we're looking at here, Elliot, amongst other things, I suspect.
Yeah, this is a tough one. There's no question. You get a lot of different debates on this kind of thing. I am very careful about injuries at this time of year. People say players don't target. I think sometimes they do.
Okay. I was born at night.
Gentlemen don't win the Stanley Cup.
Yes.
But it's, you know, it was like, this has been a really unique situation.
Yeah.
I solicited, and you know, the Maple Leafs have kept it very quiet.
Yep.
Things really exploded, and there were a lot of crazy rumors out there, and yep. Hopefully this just calms everything down. I have to admit, Jeff, not everybody is very happy with me today, and I completely understand.
I get it.
Like, yep. That's life in the big city, but I don't know. I just think that this was a really unique, difficult, strange case. And it got out of control.
Occupational hazard when it comes to situations like this. I can imagine a lot of people in that Maple Leafs organization that aren't exactly sending you flowers today. But nonetheless, the job is the job. So we'll stand by to see what happens with William Nylander. And the game last night did not go according to plan for the Toronto Maple Leafs, coming off a big win in Game 2. I read off at the beginning of the program, I'll share it with you here, because I think this player was probably the most important player on the ice last night between Toronto and Boston. Simon Schemberg, a longtime hockey observer. We've all known Simon through the IIHF, for example. He's the one who conceptually came up with the idea of the Triple Gold Club. Anyway, he tweeted out this morning, "It's very seldom you come across a player who can play at the highest level, drive the other team nuts, get away with it, perform in clutch, and who doesn't take stupid penalties. There are not many players like Brad Marchand." Now, yep. I know that Sheldon Keefe talked a lot about drawing penalties, and I understand the idea of working officials in the playoffs, trying to curry favor, get things to go your way. Oh, don't look over here. Look over there. Look what Marchand is doing here. But there's no denying, as much as we talk about Game 2 being a command performance for Austin Matthews, that was a command performance by 63 last night.
Yes, it sure was. He was, you know, it was at the beginning of the game, I said at 7 o'clock, just as we were about to go to a puck drop, you know, Marchand had 3 assists, but he really hadn't taken over the series as you would expect him to.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes out and he does it. I would bet that I know people are talking a lot about that play with Bertuzzi,
yeah,
right before Trent Frederick's 1-1 goal, but I would bet that I would bet that the one that bothered them as much, if not more, was the one right before the empty netter. Mm-hmm. I know everybody's going to have their debates about the officials. That's life. That's sports.
Yep.
If I was Toronto and I had a problem, it would have been right at the end of regulation with the Tavares penalty and then right before the empty netter. So there's no question that that's what Keith is doing. He's trying to buy a call. And that's what coaches do. That's what his job is. And, we'll see if it changes anything going into game number four.
Yeah.
But there's no question that Marchand imposed his will. Like, game two was the Austin Matthews game.
Yeah.
Game three was the Brad Marchand game.
No doubt.
Question about it.
No doubt about it. And I understand the nature of complaining about officiating, again, to curry favor. But I see the bigger issue for the Maple Leafs in this one is 1-for-11 on the power play. You can beg and scream and howl about more power plays, but if you squander them, what's the point?
Yeah, there is no question. I think the Maple Leafs, when you combine their power play and penalty kill right now, I think they're about 60,
yeah.
60%. Like, you're not going to win with that. Teams talk, like, to be a great team, you've got to be around 100, right?
Yes. Yes.
Like, that's the number you want to be at when you combine your power play and your penalty kill. You want to be at 100. So when you're at 60, you're really struggling. And there's no question about it that, that Boston has definitely picked apart the Leaf penalty kill. It's wild. Like, they changed their power play, and you don't often see, like, the two big guys out there together, and they're still finding a way.
Yeah. Okay, so a couple of more things last night before we get to some news from last night and into today. Your thoughts on what Vegas is doing to Dallas? Like, there is a sound of silence. I know it's a Simon and Garfunkel song, but, like, really, like, that rink last night. I was mentioning before you came on, when you're a home team and you can hear the sound of the puck hitting other players' sticks, you're in trouble, because that means the visitors have taken the home team crowd out of it. And that's what Vegas did. Vegas smothered Dallas last night. Logan Thompson didn't have to do much. 20 saves, only 21 shots on goal. This was a command performance by a team that, for everyone who says teams can't flip the switch in the postseason, Vegas has just flipped the switch, Elliot.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's like we said, like, going into the playoffs this year, people were talking about Vegas's underlying numbers weren't that good, but they're still Vegas.
Yeah.
And, and Kari, and obviously Mark Stone is back, and everybody knows how hugely important he is. But that William Carrier, too, like, that's another really underrated good player for Vegas that was out of their lineup. And, I'm not surprised Vegas is winning the series. I am surprised it's 2-0.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. They've been really good. As you said, they locked down Dallas. The other thing, too, is Dallas had a couple of injuries at the end of game two in Foxa and Marchment. And we'll see what happens with those. And now I think the other thing, too, is I wonder, I really wonder, Jeff, do we get a Maverick Bork sighting to kickstart the Stars a bit?
It is interesting. I never thought we'd have that conversation this early in the playoffs, but I wonder if Dallas is in the, in case of emergency, break glass mode. And that would very much be in case of emergency, break glass. Taking nothing away from Maverick Bork. I mean, wire to wire, top player in the American Hockey League. We know he's going to be excellent one day in the NHL. I'm with you, especially if those injuries mean that those two players or one of those two players won't be available for game three. I do wonder if we see Maverick Bork here for the Dallas Stars. The one thing that I'm fascinated with, and maybe I shouldn't be, but was mentioned on yesterday's program around the Vegas Golden Knights and the players out of the lineup, and whether it's Mark Stone, and we've all had the conversation about Mark Stone, or whether it's Alex Pietrangelo, whether it's William Carrier, all of it. Normally when you start the playoffs and you have a number of key players that have been out for a while, or haven't played with one another, there's a growing period, or there's a feeling out period. But I'll tell you, I watch Hurdle and Stone play together. It's like they've been playing together for 12 years. It's like they've known each other since they grew up playing junior hockey together or something. It's remarkable. Like, this is a team that just has clicked into sync instantly. There's been, like, no, like, oh, welcome back to the lineup. Oh, that's a little bit awkward. Oh, that seems off. Yeah, they're getting to know each other. It's like these guys have all been playing together for the last 20 years.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I think that, well, one thing, like, Cassidy, he can be a really tough guy to deal with, mm-hmm. but he's a good coach.
Yep.
And, you know, there's a reason, like, he coaches a system. It took Boston to the Stanley Cup Final, Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final in 2019. And it won Vegas the Stanley Cup last year. Like, when those guys are dialed in and they know how to play, they play really well. And, you know, I think you can't be a good coach without good players. Vegas has a lot of really good players. Mm-hmm. But you can be a good coach if you have good players who are motivated to play a way that you know works. And Vegas's guys are like that. They've bought into the system that Cassidy teaches. They play it very well. They're great players, and it's hard to beat. Like Jeff, Vegas is not an 8 seed in the true sense of the word.
No.
Like, if you were to go rank the 8 seeds over the last 20 years, they'd probably be number one on that list. Now, we know teams have won a Stanley Cup, but going into the playoffs, they'd be number one on that list. We said going in that there's a Stanley Cup team here that's going out in the first round.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dallas is 2 losses away, and they're going into the Hornets' Nest. That's one of the toughest buildings to play in. You know, I think that it's not over. I wouldn't count out Dallas, but there's no question that they are reeling.
You're asking them to win 4 games out of 5.
Yeah, 3 of them in Las Vegas.
That is a tall order. I think the percentage is like 7% chance to pull this one off. But if they do, it would be remarkable. Kings pull even with the Oilers. Andrei Kopitar with the overtime heroics. This stat still stuns me. I was mentioning this to Matty a second ago. Andrei Kopitar with the game-winning goal in overtime. The 3rd game-winning goal, overtime goal in LA Kings history. And that's the most of any Kings player. This is a team that goes back to 67, Elliot. Before you and I were even born, and we're old.
Mm-hmm.
3rd.
Oh, very old. And we should say that you're older than me.
Barely. Just by a whisper, Elliot. Just by a whisper. Just by a hint. But anyway, your thoughts on what the LA Kings did last night to the Edmonton Oilers. I was very much under the impression that if LA was going to win a game here, that it was going to be a 2-1 game or maybe a 1-0 game and Cam Talbot stands on his head.
Yeah.
They kind of exchanged goals here with the Oilers, Elliot. I never thought that I would see that.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that either. No question about it. I definitely wasn't expecting it. I think they are. I don't know that they would want to do that 3 more times.
No.
But I think, you know, Kopitar scored a brilliant goal. Talbot, like, all you're asking from Talbot is to be one goal better than the other guy. And last night he was, and he made some very big saves in that game. But the guy who stood out to me last night was Byfield.
Yeah.
First of all, he made that incredible play that meant it wasn't an icing.
Yep.
And so Kopitar could get it on a stick on the winning goal. But I just thought the whole night he was a force.
Yep.
And, you know, they split up that line, that Kopitar-Kempe-Byfield line to try to get Dubois going. And they put it back together in game number one. And like I said last night, I'm going to offer Jim Hiller some free advice that, you know, don't break those guys up again. They're pretty good together.
Yeah. Was Byfield a deliberate deflection to Kopitar, or was it just luck? I'm in camp that he knew what he was doing.
The way that kid plays, I am inclined to believe that he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yes.
And if it was luck, I wouldn't admit it. I'd say, oh, no, I did it on purpose.
Yes. News around the NHL. This one kind of a shocker because I think we look at it and say, like, well, what was David Quinn expected to do with the roster he'd been handed? Mike Greer yesterday firing David Quinn as head coach of the San Jose Sharks. So he's been fired by, you know, 2 other people from BU, Chris Drury, and now Mike Greer. Your thoughts on the dismissal in San Jose?
I was surprised. you know, same thing as you, as you said. I shouldn't say I was surprised. I think after a season like this one, you always know it's possible. I would just say that and I think everybody would agree, of all the firings that we might see or have seen recently, this might be the most unfair in terms of what was expected.
Yes.
I think one of the things that happened was the Sharks this year realized that you can't be half pregnant. You're either in or you're out. You're rebuilding or you're retooling. And they tried the quote-unquote retool, and they realized that wasn't going to work. And so this year the plan changed. It went to the full rebuild. So I think any time that the ground shifts under you like that, there's always a chance that things can change. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I wondered about was, does San Jose have someone that they want to look at specifically?
Yes.
And felt that this individual might be contacted by other teams, and this individual might be contacted by other teams, and therefore they had to get in the game. So I'm curious to see if that's going to be the case, or did they just say, you know what, this is our call, and we're going to make it. Because I think, like I said, Jeff, I think everybody agrees that that nobody was doing better with this roster this year.
Excellent. Patrick Kane, I want to ask what it sounded or felt like to you. So, Detroit Red Wings winger yesterday, Patrick Kane, thank you to teammates, thank you to coaches and to fans. And here's the quote from Pat Kane: this past year gave us memories we will never forget. Is that a sign-off by Pat Kane?
I looked into that, and I was told not to read anything specific into that yet.
Okay. Sure felt like one.
It did. And you know what? Like, especially with what he said at the end of the year in his exit media interview, he sure made it sound like it was the past tense. But I would say also that like, it sounded like it was in the past tense, no question.
Yeah.
But one of the things I've just learned over the years is that what's true today may not be true tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Steve Yzerman made it very clear he had some difficult decisions to make. He wanted to bring all of his UFAs back, but he won't necessarily be able to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the other things is that he's got to make the puzzle pieces fit around what are expected to be big extensions for Raymond and Sider.
Yes.
And, you know, I think that I've talked about this. You know, Kane made it very clear he wants term. Yzerman is very judicious in how he hands out term. It doesn't mean that he doesn't do it, but his patterns are kind of predictable. And that is that he really tries to stay away from it unless you're younger.
The older
you get, the more careful he is about it. So, you know what? I was just told don't read anything too much into it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, whenever you hear something like that, and combine it with the press conference, you don't feel optimistic about the way things are going if you're a Red Wing fan.
Couple things quick. The NHL Hockey in Utah event yesterday. First of all, Liam O'Brien is maybe already the most popular hockey player in Utah after that performance yesterday. What did you make of the entire event? Packed house at the Delta Center yesterday as the organization gets introduced to the community.
You know, I didn't really get a chance to see a ton of it because it happened while we were working the games. But it seemed very exciting.
Exactly.
You know, one of the things I always remember was when the Raptors first got their team, or they were bidding for their team. There were three bidders, and the NBA said they were going to come to Toronto. David Stern was the commissioner at the time. Mm-hmm. The NBA said they were going to come to Toronto, and they were going to meet with the three big groups. And they told them that we don't want any media. We want this to be quiet. And one of the big groups, the groups that eventually won, the Bitto family, they asked another owner for advice, and they said that the other owner told them, don't listen to that. If you have an enthusiastic crowd welcoming them, people are, they are going to love it. So the other two big groups did it privately, and then I think it was Scotiabank was their bank. They came to meet them at Scotiabank, and there was a whole auditorium full of people cheering, we want the ball. And the NBA did love it. Now, that's not why they got the team, but it didn't hurt. It didn't hurt. And the NBA did love it, and it really worked for them. And I think about that as I'm watching that thing yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, I was wondering, would the players want to go in quietly? And I bet you there's some of them who are like, yeah, I'd prefer to go in quietly.
Yeah.
But then when you see that and you see the enthusiasm coupled with Ryan Smith's visit the last week and how well it went, like the players introducing each other and Liam O'Brien going spicy tuna.
So good.
Those are just great fan and viral moments. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah. A nickname given to him by Jordan Schmaltz, by the way, for those that collect such trivia like that. Yeah, there you go.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Couple more things quickly. Alex Vlasic, you've heard me go on, and I know you're a big fan of him as well. How can you not? Alex Vlasic signing a contract extension with the Blackhawks. It is a six-year, $27.6 million deal. 4.6 is the AAV. That is a really good number for a key piece of that blue line for the next however many years. This kid is fantastic.
Yeah, you know, it's always tougher to figure out values when there's a player who doesn't have huge counting stats.
Doesn't matter.
He had 16 points this year, but there's no question that he is a really good defensive player. And I saw the Blackhawk fans when that got announced were really excited today.
Should be.
So I always feel, Jeff, if you have a player who you think is a cornerstone, sign them for as long as you can because the price never goes down.
What's the one thing we've been talking about recently, even going back to 2019, the teams that win the Stanley Cup, the teams that are the most successful have blue lines that have players who can defend. Everybody's in a rush to put up 80 points. I get it. But it's the teams that have the players that can defend. Those tend to be the teams that are successful. And there's the Kevin Korchinskis to fill the nets.
Yes.
Thatcher Demko traveling to Nashville, Elliot. What happened to week to week for Thatcher Demko?
Well,
do we read anything into this one?
What it says to me is that if he was out long term, then I don't think he'd be traveling. To me, it's a good sign. It doesn't necessarily mean he's any closer to returning, but I had heard the same rumors of it as everybody else that it was going to be even longer than they thought. But what I'd said publicly, I think, was that people warned me not to guess because they just didn't know. So the fact he's there with them, I don't think this is anything imminent. I don't think anybody should expect that that means he could surprise us and play game 3 or 4. We already know that DeSmith is starting tomorrow night. I think this is a situation where it says that at least he's still on the radar. Again, I don't think it's anytime soon, but I don't necessarily think it means it's the worst. I think it means that they're not considering it right now to be the worst case scenario.
I know we talked a lot about Vancouver the other day here on the program. I still do wonder about Tyler Myers. And let me drop something on you. So I was texting with our mutual friend, great hockey researcher, Stan Narodka, the legend. And we're going back and forth on Tyler Myers. And he said, Tyler Myers, you'll love this one, Free, just hits you where you live. You love stuff like this. Is the only active player that played a playoff game as a member of the Buffalo Sabres. The only active player in the NHL who's played a playoff game as a member of the Buffalo Sabres. He texted me that one, and I was stunned. Anything else on Vancouver you're hearing? We'll use Tyler Myers as the jump-off point.
Well, no, I mean, obviously, he made the trip too, so you can tell by the way talked about it the other night, he wasn't too worried about it.
Yeah.
I'm not panicking after that game. I expected this to be a long series. I thought Nashville played hard and desperate. I know that there's a lot of concern about Pettersson. And he definitely looked like a frustrated player. I thought Nashville played great, but I'm not overreacting to that loss. I thought that was a game that Nashville won more than Vancouver lost. That's going to happen to you in a series. And, you know, I think I'm like most other people. I want to see Pettersson be a little bit more aggressive with his shot. And I'm sure that's going to be dialed into him for tomorrow night.
Save the hardest question for last. Swayman or Ullmark, game four?
I would do Swayman, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if they would do Ullmark.
We shall see. I'm with you. I would say Swayman, who has that sort of magic against the Maple Leafs and was phenomenal again last night. I would just give him the ball at this point, but I know the sensitivities about what happened last year. Okay, enjoy your afternoon. You get more of me tonight for the podcast. I know you're excited about that.
Well, you know what? At least tonight, because the games are 7 and 7:30, it's not a 1 a.m. taping.
Don't jinx it.
I won't be butchering names. Oh, my, I cannot believe how many people, like, writ me for the Chris Jastrzemski mispronunciation. I'm like, come on, guys.
That was good.
Like worn down. I was worn out. But, no, hopefully we get, like, a normal time tonight.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I was awful here on the show yesterday because I was so tired because we were up so late. I was like, oh, man, this is – what's the old saying? Sometimes you paint up a castle, sometimes you paint a barn. Yeah, yesterday I painted a barn on the show.
Sometimes you finger paint.
Yeah, that's what that was. You be good. We'll chat later on tonight.
All right, buddy. Take care.